The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
For our Tay Show today, I'm honored to share the talk with Dharma holder Reverend Paul. I will begin and then pass it to him. Case 36 from the Blue Cliff Record. One day, Changsha went off to wander in the mountains. When he returned, the head monk of the temple met him at the gate and asked, "Where have you been?" "I've been strolling about in the hills." "Which way did you go?" "I went out following the scented grass and came back chasing the falling flowers." "That's exactly the feeling of spring," said the head monk. "It's better than autumn dew falling on the lotuses," said Changsha. And Zhuido commented, "I am grateful for your reply." On several occasions in the Sesshin, I've mentioned and pointed to the differences between formal practice and informal practice. Formal practice being the practice of upright zazen posture, unmoving, eyes lowered, a posture of dignity and power and strength. And the practice of informal practice, the posture of washing dishes, preparing a meal, watering plants, going for a walk. Looking at the formal posture from the outside, an outside observer would see these great pillars of strength sitting straight, upright on their cushions, immovable, imperturbable. And perhaps those from the outside during our informal practice, maybe our partners that we live with, or our pets, or our plants, notice something else different about our maybe usual goings about, maybe a more measured and more attentive way of moving. As I mentioned last night, these practices have a thread, the thread of practice that falls throughout all of them, this practice of attention, attention to your life. There is a practice, however, that looks nothing like anything. A practice that has no apparent effort, doesn't announce itself. It's the practice of life. The practice that we take in every day as we wander about in the world. There can be a trap in this practice of Zen. When we see the polished look and the polished feel of this attentive attention to our lives, there may be a calmness, a serenity that arises. And we can mistakenly mistake the polish for the treasure. Somehow we may feel that to practice is to rise above the noise and the stink of human life. And we can imagine that awakening, enlightenment, is someplace to arrive, somewhere other than here. We may have an inner image in our minds of an awakened person, person who's calm above the fray, maybe. Sort of like a dewdrop sitting on a blade of grass. Not completely absorbed. Somewhat a little bit above. When we practice through Sesshin, this intense practice, we may sense and feel and touch the clarity of the awakened heart. The clarity is real. The openness is real. But it's the ground, not the destination. And the danger is falling in love with the clarity, protecting it, and withdrawing from life. And then the practice subtly turns against itself. Maybe suddenly, maybe gradually. And we come to expect something else, something other than what is right in front of us. In this beautiful koan, which Alan picked out for us for this sesshin, there's a mention of spring and autumn. In some ways, we can see autumn as a letting go, the leaves falling, the sun setting lower in the sky. Perhaps letting go of all things impure, a still vastness beneath all things that emerges in autumn. In comparison, spring could be seen as an eruption, the eruption of color, fragrance, motion, arriving, the world just moving, the form of the world in full glory. Both are needed. The absolute purity and transparency, and the 10,000 things, fleeting and transient. Living only in the pure autumn, the beautiful side, is incomplete. We need to balance, to walk the razor's edge between the two. But this isn't quite a balance, actually, when walking the razor's edge. Or sometimes it's referred to in a verse from one of our koans as walking along the sword. It's not quite a balance, it's more of a texture of the moment. Autumn and spring, everywhere. So the teacher, the great master out in the fields, coming and going, free. When he returns, how can he express this? It's beyond words. But as we say, you have to say something. Why? Because we're human beings. And this is what we do. What could be the right response? Maybe, hello, have a cup of tea, a bow. But the head monk says something else. He recognizes something powerful and real in his teacher. But he names it. He holds it up and names it. He says, that's exactly the feeling of spring. Exactly. And by doing so, he steps back from it a little bit. It's apparent to me that he's making this awakening, an object to admire rather than a reality to inhabit. And this is a constant trap that we all fall into, myself included. We recognize the scent of freedom from across the room, but we're only standing in the doorway. Understanding it is not the same thing as living it. We've been talking about wandering. It's been the theme of this sesshin. This wandering, going where the moment leads, going where the heart leads. Perhaps not a planned or a trajectory or a navigation, not necessarily knowing the outcome, which requires relinquishing control. Maybe not preparing so carefully and agreeing to be present. I can say for myself, most suffering of my life lives in the gap between the moment that I have and the one that I think I should have. Always negotiating, waiting for conditions to be right. But Chan Ching didn't wait. He just went right out the gate of the temple and walked in the mountains. This sesshin, this beautiful sesshin, this powerful practice, can become a beautiful trap. If we are pursuing a particular inner experience and calling it practice, the structure that's here, the times, timing, the bells, the bowing, doksan, zazen, all of it is a structure to let everything in, not to keep life out. Every moment here in sesshin is an invitation not to achieve, but to follow, to wander. Trust and simplicity and a willingness to go wherever the moment actually leads, whatever the moment is calling for. If we wait for confusion to clear, for our grief, our heartache to settle, our understanding to arrive, we will miss our life. Chan Ching didn't miss his life. He just went out, wandered, and followed, and showed us everything. How to live. So in your practice during sesshin, the question that you may carry in your silence is, what are you waiting for? What would it mean to wander right now, following exactly where the moment is already taking you? And I'll leave it there. And I'll let Reverend Paul clarify it all for you.
I love the way our sesshin is unfolding. In this sesshin doesn't require me to love it. Maybe some of you have appreciated and loved different moments, and other times kicking and screaming return back to our screen. And what I'm particularly loving is hearing Michael's pointers and a couple things in particular that really are resonating with me. And Alan opened these up for us yesterday. Really, the importance of practice, the importance of practice. And Michael is echoing this, at least in my ears. And then also this recognition that that's not enough. Michael talked about that's the ground, but not the destination. And in truth, the destination is unknown. This is one of those benefits of wandering. The bumper sticker, which actually I had on a t-shirt for some time, not all who wander are lost. Not all who wander are lost. And there's part of me that sometimes I'm very aware of this possibility that I'm lost. This idea of who Paul is, this idea of what I'm supposed to be doing and how I'm supposed to be showing up. This type of loss feels so freeing and connected with all of you and all things with this world. This type of losing the idea of what I'm supposed to do, losing the idea of who I am. Often at this point in Sesshin, I'm in this point of looking back at the time and looking forward at the time in Sesshin. And not so much right now, but a common experience for me is that I really need to double down. I really need to really give everything to my practice. I still encourage this. I still feel that within me. But usually it's in some type of judgment of what has come before this doubling down. Please double down. And no need to judge what has come before. I was talking with one of you here recently in this aspect of just phoning it in. That I know what to do during Sesshin. And I must not be taking it too seriously. I'm just phoning it in. And I really would encourage us to see that this wandering is not phoning it in. Michael encouraged us on the first evening, and we all played with this aspect of our intention. And then Michael doubled down, encouraged us to double down of really looking at our intention. But this is not to dismiss the intention from the first evening. Quite frankly, it's not to dismiss our intention from just the moment before. This willingness to wander, Hongzhi says, this wandering into the circle of wonder. This type of entering, that everything that has transpired in our life has brought us right to this moment. And everything that is part of this moment will bring us to the rest of our life, however long or short that life may be. And I have no idea where I'm going in this wandering. I have an intention, I have a directionality. I am acting. As I heard in Michael's talk, the importance of living this life. I said this yesterday in the Dharma dialogue and was parroted back to me later on. And while they're not my words, they are my words. that Zen is not about Zen. Zen is about life. And this is what is required of all of us. And I really appreciate in the context of our koan that we're working with, the monk's question as far as Chan Sha. And I think the one part of the question that is coming up for me is, where did you go? I really appreciate that. This has been like a little wado, something that I've been sitting with since yesterday. Where did you go? Where did you go? And what's coming up for me is, Shakyamuni Buddha never, supposedly, never called himself Buddha, never called himself this awakened one. He called himself Tathagata. And depending where you put the emphasis, this can mean one who comes and one who goes. And we are all the Tathagata. This coming, we arrive 10 minutes before the formal practice period. This going, this moving into home practice. This coming, this for me being greeted and offering love to my dogs. This going, this leaving the kitchen with the dishes that I just cleaned to come back into the Zendo. That this is our life. Where did you go? Where did you go? And even though Chan Sha appears to be giving a narration and of the path, he is talking about his life. We could see this aspect of springtime, as Michael was pointing out, one of abundance, and we could also see it as this is the flourishing of our life. And later talking about autumn. Somehow, this aspect of towards the end of our life. The Chan Sha and the monk here are talking about life. None other than this life. Everything that is arriving for us right now in our formal practice and in our life is our life. Home practice, formal practice, what is arising, there's our life. And how are we meeting it? This willingness to wander, even as Alan was pointing out, this is wandering to the grocery store, doesn't require the woods. That we can approach this life as Hongzhi is encouraging us to wander into the circle of wonder. This life is awesome. In the full sense of that word, awe, which is overwhelming, defies expectation, this awe. I think I know who I am. I think I know where I'm going. And then something happens and the awe arises. This life is awesome in the more colloquial sense of it. It truly is amazing. So rare, so precious, so finite. This life. Our ghost was reminding of us how brief this life is and the importance of not to squander. So please double down. Give all in everything to our formal practice and our home practice and our rest practice and sleep practice and eat practice. Give it your all. One day, Chansha went wandering in the mountains. Upon returning, when he got to the gate, the head monk asked, "Where are you coming from, master?" Sha said, "From wandering in the mountains." The head monk asked, "Where did you go?" Sha said, "First, I went pursuing the fragrant grasses. Then I returned, following the falling flowers." The head monk said, "How very much like the sense of springtime." Sha said, "It even surpasses the autumn dew dripping on the lotuses." Suedo added the remark, "Thank you for your reply." Thank you. So please sit comfortably. I will move into our Dharma dialogue. And Michael and I want to invite Alan to join us in response. And please raising your Zoom hand when something comes and goes for you. Yeah, I do.
I'm like, wow. Yeah. So Michael's talk, awesome. And then Paul came, coming in and then just capping it all. And just, just the, how whatever spring feeling was there, further enhanced and the fragrance of one just, bursting everywhere is what I felt like, and the possibility of just wondering this very moment within the talk and even within the session just came about so fully in your talk. And yeah, I hope that we can wonder again and again, although life seems to be so confined. And yeah, so thankful for that reminder.
And the fragrance, it's always here. It may not smell sweet though, but it's the fragrance is here, waiting for us patiently.
And life can seem confined, but then we find a way to wander within the confines.
Lovely. Right. Thank you, Madhu. Yeah, Steve.
For the last year or so, I've been living with a very particular schedule. I get up in the morning, I have my breakfast, I paint, I take a walk, I sit and play a game on my computer. Then dinner time comes, and then I'm watching stuff on my screen. And recently, I decided to let myself wander out of that because I realized that there were things going around me all the time which interrupted my well laid out plan for the day. And instead of thinking of these things as being an intrusion and creating discord within my carefully laid out plan, I decided that I would pay attention to those things and discovered I could pretty much do anything I wanted in my plan, but it just didn't fall into the same particular one after another thing. So, while you talk about the wandering, that's what came up for me, is to not be held into a rigid notion of what comes next, but to just follow how the day is presenting itself.
Yeah, and I really appreciate this, Steve, because at least what I'm hearing from you, this is not about throwing away a schedule, but it's opening to the wandering that is already here. And in this case, sometimes the wandering is, this sounds like too strong of a word, but almost imposed on us. Like you said, this, hadn't planned on this, these little disruptions. And yeah, we could try to put blinders on it. And definitely sometimes I do as well. And this aspect of opening to it. And I think that's the wonder that I think Hongzhi is talking about. In truth, we don't have to do anything different. We do not have to move into the hills of Vermont to go ahead and to wander. That it's already here, and can I be aware of both the opening and closing to that wonder as I wander through my life?
But what I heard you say, Steve, is that you've given yourself permission to color outside the lines. And you know, we start to color outside the lines, and after a while we realize that there never were any lines. We just thought that there were.
And I always thought it was my schedule that gave me pleasure, but I discovered in letting go of it, there was more pleasure.
I love that. I love that because, someone could have told you that, a year ago when you started this. And then there is this knowing for yourself. And I think that is so important. So, great. Thanks, Steve. Yeah, Tom.
Yeah, thank you so much for this talk. And so listening to both Michael and Paul, this moment I'm feeling in and then out, and you know, not uncommon. And kind of prodding myself, pay attention, you know, enter, enter. And then when Alan made this comment about even the confines are a textured, rich territory, however he put it. And wow, that's just wonderful to hear, because you know, I so often I'm not where I should be or something. And what is that? That is also worth wandering into. It just opened something. It feels really good. So thank you.
Yeah, I think it's a way of seeing these so-called limitations as opportunities. That not opportunity to overcome, but to see them as this too. That at least for me, as you were talking about it, I felt kind of an expansion, this willing to contain even these so-called limitations. That this too is part of my life, and not in a negative sense of, oh, this limitation, but isn't that interesting that I've drawn this line here? And just as Alan was saying to Steve, it's only after we're truly coloring outside the lines that we realize that there were no limitations, that there were no lines. This is that gateless gate that we all have to enter again and again and again.
Yeah.
Thank you,
I'll
Tom.
add, Tom,
Oh,
that
yeah, please.
I'll add that, you know, you were talking about the place that you find yourself. And whatever the place is where you find yourself, that's the only place you could possibly be at that moment. Because if you could be anywhere else, you would be. And so, you know, it really is. So rather than think we should be someplace else, we do just what Paul was advising. We find a way We find the freedom in that place, however shitty it feels or narrow or however we thought it should have been, and it's not just letting all that go. And yeah, a great place to be after all.
Thank you.
Marcus.
Thank you both for the talk. It brought up something that happened to me last week. I was doing a grocery delivery order for a customer, and it was I remember it was about 8 miles past Jaffrey, New Hampshire, and a lot of back roads. I drove quite a ways out there, and after completing the delivery, I went to plug in my phone, and there was water in the bottom of the charger cable, and it shorted out the phone. I had no map, and honestly, I don't even have my wife's phone number memorized. And I got in the car and looked around and said, "Geez, I have no idea where I'm at or how to get home." I've lived in this state now 8 years, and I'm probably like a lot of us. You follow the arrows or the voice on your GPS and have no clue of what's right in front of you. And it ended up taking about an hour and a half to get home, and I had to make a couple stops. And even when people were kind of telling me street names, I'm like, wow, I really have no idea. As I just don't typically pay attention. I'm looking at the map, and I had no idea where I was. And it was an interesting thing because I really just at one point laughed, and I was like, I mean, my wife's like, "What took you so long to get home?" I'm like, "I got lost." And she's like, "Are you kidding me?" And it was a fun drive back, and it really got me to, look what was right in front of me the whole time, and not just watch what was happening on the screen, and come across a couple new stores and some areas that were kind of marvelous. But it was just brought that funny story up.
I love the story, Marcus. There's a truth that rings for me in that we really never really know where we're going. Who among us right here would have thought maybe 20 years ago that we'd be doing this on a Sunday morning, right? We just don't know. And of course, the comfort of finding a route that we can stick to and kind of follow through all the time, is a way of limiting our lives. They're very certainly routes and directions and all those paths of maps that we use are helpful and expedient. But a lot of the wonder of life gets lost in that. In the expedience.
You may have noticed, Marcus, that those of us of a certain age were smiling as you were telling that story because we learned to drive and drove for many years before there was anything like a cell phone, and we used maps on occasion and had to memorize certain street names and landmarks. And I was thinking about, and so wonderful for you to have that phone taken away and get to find your way. And I was actually thinking about something I mentioned yesterday, which is that the Chan ancestors did not leave us detailed instructions about sitting, about sitting meditation. And it came to me that maybe this is so that we wouldn't be looking at that phone, look, we wouldn't be listening to Alexa Roshi telling us now do this and now do that, but we would find our own way and we would find our landmarks and would arrive at the right place, maybe after lots of wrong turns, but maybe that's why they didn't leave us blueprints for our meditation practice.
Thank you, Marcus. Jenny.
Thank you for the talk, Michael and Paul. Thinking of this, am I doing it right? Am I doing Zen right? Or am I doing life right? Anytime Anytime I'm asking that, it's like no, because I've separated from it already, asking it and examining it and looking at it. But then there's also this intention to like see all the pulleys and strings hooked up and not be, manipulated all the time by my puppet strings. And that having that intention, I guess it's like just remembering that is that question. Am I doing this? Am I living the way I intended when I was awake? Yeah. I don't know if I have a point or anything, but
Oh,
came to
I
mind.
mean, yeah, no, I hear it. And, I think this is, I mean, it could be part of the, the wandering. It could be part of the, the wondering, of it. And, sometimes it's how the question is asked, is this one that kind of forces judgment or comparison to something, then I hear what you're saying that, this can kind of separate. In this aspect of it, is it just, coming back to the breath? It's, I'm maybe not exactly where your mind was thinking, but, I really do think about the four parts of our breath practice. I can get so focused on the idea that my practice is only when I have my attention on the breath. And I really have to be reminded again and again that it's the intention to be with the breath. The mind wanders. That's part of the practice. That I notice the mind has wandered. That's part of the practice. And then this choice of coming back, that whole thing is our practice. So asking the questions, I think, is at least from my lived experience, is natural, ordinary, really to be expected. And we can watch that judgment arise, and maybe just be with the question itself, and then keep moving forward. Yeah.
And I think when we ask this question, "Am I doing it right?" It may be wise to follow the words of Lin Ji in "Do nothing," and do nothing to so that life can do you, to get out of the way, stop meddling, allow life to come through you, and then whatever happens, happens.
Thanks, Jenny. Yeah, Bix.
Yeah, right after I raised my hand, Paul kind of already said what I was thinking, which was that like all this talk of lines, coloring outside the lines, coloring inside the lines, confines and all these types of things, when we do this practice, we see that they're not really there.
And, inherent in what you're saying, at least for me, is that my lived experience is that this formal practice is a requirement of my life. Just as Michael was saying, and try to repeat, is that really is the ground, and the destination is everything. So it includes that in this lived life, and I have to see it again and again. This is, I think, why we call it practice. And this is why we joke about the last word of Zen. There's no such thing as complete, as done. And so this aspect of having to practice and to be reminded and to remember this life again and again and again.
Yeah, and the freedom that we the promise or the freedom is to actually live within the lines. Knowing that, they're the lines that we create are of our own creation, but sometimes they're very helpful. I don't want to jump the median strip and drive on the wrong side of the road.
Good, good. Yeah. Thank you, Bex. So Aaron or Corwin? Or both? Can someone unmute? Let's see. I've unmuted you. Oh, and then someone muted you back. So I've unmuted you again.
Yeah, I had a kind of a question. So one thing that's been coming up for me is just so many choices. And I appreciate Sesshin because it feels like so much is planned out for us as far as that goes. And seems like there's some freedom in that. And then when I have so much freedom to do so many different things, I sometimes get maybe overwhelmed, like which choice do we make? And have the habit of, well, I shouldn't have done that. I should have done this instead. I don't know. I guess I just was wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Well, I want to acknowledge, I mean, what your lived experience is. I'm not exactly as far as hearing a question, but I definitely want to validate this aspect of that there is great liberation and freedom in, as Michael was pointing out, these particular lines that they really can help. And in this case, in Sesshin, we have the structure. So we step away from many aspects of our lives, and we simplify things, and we step away, step back, not really step away, but we step back in Sesshin, so we can step forward. There's always, if we're lucky, there's always going to be these choices for us. At some point, there won't be. But if we're lucky, we are going to have these choices. And it's not about criticizing the sense of overwhelmed. It's not even about, I know this is exactly what to do. This is the perfect choice, and it will always work every time. That's not my lived experience. And I think this is what you're describing as well. So stepping back in Sesshin, to step forward, in our ongoing life as it unfolds.
Yeah, Aaron, I love your question because there's an idea that we could make the right choice, the choice that's going to be optimal for me, and to which I would say just make a choice, and then see what happens. Step forward. We don't know, the one thing about the internet is that we think we can figure it all out, get enough information to make the right choice. No, we can't. And it's not worth our time. I mean, obviously, with some discernment, we know certain things we can do and we shouldn't do, but step forward. Let's take a step.
Great. Thank you, Aaron. And we'll have these last three comments to finish up the Dharma dialogue, and we'll go to Pierce.
Paul, you mentioned twice the line from Hangzhi to wander into the center of the circle of wonder. And I often wondered about the translator's choice of words there. Why is it wander? But I think you've shed some light on it, both you and Michael, because I think, and also perhaps on the question of intention. I mean, if my intention is to use this formal practice of Zazen to go straight to the center of the circle, then I think that's probably a mistake. And also for me, this sheds some light on our koan, because Wangshu didn't go out seeking the essence of spring. And so that's why the monk's question is a little odd in that he says, "Where did you go?" And then Wangshu says what he encountered. But our practice is not to formulate a goal like that, but to to go out just to encounter whatever arises. And I'm also thinking of the famous verse by Dogen where he says, "Do not ask me where I am going as I wander this infinite world where every step I take is home."
Yeah, your contribution, Pierce, made me think of that. It's a definition. Sometimes it's they say it's Pascal that said this, that God, he thinks of God as a circle whose circumference is nowhere and whose center is everywhere. So I think that's the kind of circle that is being talked about here. That Hangzhi is pointing to. Its circumference is nowhere and its center is everywhere. So there we are, wandering into the center of the circle of wonder.
Lovely. Thank you, Pierce. Michael C.
I was very drawn to maps and direction and place. I identify with my sense of direction a lot because of its really feeling. Like, I can't explain to you how I learned to tell where I was exactly, or that sense of things. And again, those of us who had to learn without a GPS, we didn't know where we were. We couldn't say coordinates and say, "Here's where I am." Even if you had a map, maps were wrong. Maps were inaccurate. The map is not the territory. And so this sense and darkness and seasonal changes, right? This, you had, it really required a reaching out to the surroundings and request to say, "Help me decide." Right, a trust, and I really feel that as a sense of loss for myself now, because I didn't feel like I have the time or even the tools to navigate that way now. And it actually eerily tied with Aaron's tyranny of choice, right? That as a sense of direction, as a compass, points. But it doesn't tell you where you are. And you still, it's this idea that we have to choose correctly, as opposed to saying, "Well, this direction feels okay. I'm going to try it." And all of the mistakes that we make on the road build that sense and lend to us this feeling of where it is we're headed. So that was it. Thank you.
And Michael, as I hear you say this, of course, we're talking about wandering and as far as wandering through the mountains, Marcus, wandering through the back roads of New Hampshire and Massachusetts, and there is that wandering, and but ultimately, this is a metaphor for we're always feeling in. To this moment. We don't have to literally get in the car or literally get out as far as in the woods. We don't even have to get lost to have that feeling. And I heard it strongly in Michael's response earlier that just the importance of making the choice and it's making this choice just as you did to raise your hand and to speak up. And you had no idea what I was going to say and what how you were going to be met. But now there's another choice that's made, and we feel into it. This is not some woo-woo thing. This is actually very practical, that this is how we get throughout our days and throughout our lives. We do have that sense of direction, and we sense into it each and every moment.
There's a beautiful poem by David Wagner called Lost, when he talks about being
Mm.
lost in the woods. And he says, If you're lost in the woods, just stand still. The trees aren't lost, and wherever you are is called right here.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, and Joanne, I'll let you have the last. No pressure.
Even if I wasn't the last, I just was relating in a lot of different ways to what's being said today, but I was relating to possibility and how maybe because of some choices I've made in the last few years, there's it's not that I sense possibility. I really loved that reference to God not having a circumference and the center being everywhere, because I have felt a little outside of life or separate in a lot of ways, and that is fading, but it's really only fading because I'm trusting more. And I made this choice turn of the year to kind of randomly show up in my grandson's life as opposed to think that I have to connect in a certain way and with the family and that things have to feel a certain way. I just am saying, I'm coming. And everyone's like, yay. It turns out I can do that over and over and over. And it's having a huge effect on my connectivity and comprehension of what's happening. It's having a huge impact on everyone else, too. Everyone's like, oh, like, and so this, like, sense that I am a part of things and wandering is a part. That is what wandering is in a weird way for me right now. That I am a part of things, that I'm not separate and so should cloister and not wander and be afraid. And anyway, so.
I love this, Joanne. And I'm often struck when sometimes Zen is presented as this philosophical discourse, sit in the chair and ponder it, or even just sit on the cushion, just sitting in this philosophical. And I think you're pointing at the aspect that this requires action, and that Zen actually asks us to actively engage in our lives. And this aspect of, I'm coming, I'm showing up, and just that aspect of it. It's almost like I can see you, or I can see myself just waking up in the morning, and this is how I greet the day. I'm coming, I'm coming day, I'm coming sunlight. And it really does require that this is an active process. Life is action. It is about showing up. It is about coming.
Joanne, as I listened to you, what something came up for me about the koan, which is that when the head monk asks Changsha, "Where did you go?" Changsha doesn't take out a map and start unfolding it and say, "Well, I went up this trail," and then but he just says, "Yeah, I was following these scented grasses. I came back following these falling flowers," and that was the flavor of how you described your life now. As a grandmother who doesn't ask for a schedule, where's my visitation schedule? But just, what? Well, sometimes I follow my nose to the house, and sometimes I follow it back. Yeah, how wonderful.
Great. Thank you, Joanne. And thank you, everyone. Please let's settle back in, and we'll give it back over to our officers.